Josh Haston here, Israel Uncensored, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Thanks so much for joining us. You can get in touch with me during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Joshua Haston, on Twitter at Josh Haston. Now, many of you know that I'm affiliated with the Regavim organization. I serve as their international director. Regavim, of course, is a legal watchdog which monitors illegal building in Israel, maintains Israel's national lands for this generation and generations to come, really just inspects and makes sure that everything is kosher, whether it's in the north, whether it's in the south, Judea and Samaria. We have people out in the field who are on a daily basis monitoring the situation, whether it's illegal building, environmental hazards, on and on. Check out regavim.org. So in regard to the south of the country, the Negev Desert, there is a phenomenon of illegal building being carried out by the Bedouin community. This has been going on for years and years and years. And Regavim has recently put together a major policy paper on how to solve the housing crisis down in the Negev, really to save the Negev Desert for generations to come. So the policy paper, if you go to regavim.org, you can see the policy paper there online. The official name for the policy paper, and I am here with Mayor Deutsch, who is the Director of Policy and Knesset Relations for Regavim, is called, Mayor, the name of the policy paper.
The Negev Challenge. The Negev Challenge comes after what Ben Gurion, the first Prime Minister of Israel, has called the Negev. He treated the Negev as a future of the State of Israel, and Ben Gurion said that the challenge of the people of Israel is going to be in the Negev. Whether or not the people of Israel are going to be able to flourish, to make the Negev bloom, because the Negev is the only area in Israel which is not populated yet, and since Israel is such a small state, he saw the Negev as a future for the people of Israel.
So we got right to it. We didn't even officially introduce Mayor Deutsch here to the program, Israel Uncensored, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Again, the policy paper, the plan for regulating Bedouin settlement in the Negev, and there's a major campaign being undertaken by Regavim to get this information out, to lobby not only members of Knesset, government ministers, in order to encourage them to adopt the plan, but also get the word out to the general population at large here in Israel who may not even realize the situation in the Negev. I mean, it's extensive in terms of the illegal building. You have areas down in the Negev, if you combined the city, the land masses of the cities of Haifa, of Jerusalem, of Tel Aviv, and of Be'er Sheva, all of those areas combined, that is the size of, it's even greater than, that is the size of the illegal building taking place down there. Mayor, if you can't just describe that reality and what it's like down there in the Negev today, the problem.
So Josh, I think you put it really, you said it as it is. The main problem that we have in the Negev is the illegal housing, the illegal overtaking of land. As you said, if you take the 10 biggest cities in Israel and combine them and add like 10 more kibbutzim or moshavim, that's the size that was taken over illegally by the Bedouins. Not only that, but it's, as we say in Hebrew, medina betoch medina, it's a state within a state. It's a total lawlessness what's going on in the Negev. It's not only the illegal building, but the illegal building is a symptom of many other things, which is polygamy and not paying taxes at all. The problem of what we call protection, where it's like exactly like other places in the world where the mafia is ruling, and that's what's going on in the Negev. Sadly, the state of Israel is not de facto, on the ground, is not the sovereign in the Negev, sadly to say so.
So let's understand the situation. The Bedouin are citizens of the State of Israel, and maybe you could just discuss the reality in terms of who they are, where they came from. There's a perception today that you're dealing with a nomadic people. I mean, Bedouin historically are nomadic people, but things are different today in modern times. Talk a little bit about how the Bedouin got to Israel. Where did they come from? Where did they set up shop down in the Negev Desert? And how did this situation spiral out of control? And I'm reading here in the materials that there are over 2,300 illegal clusters down in the Negev. Those are Bedouin who are living off the grid, not paying taxes, complete lawlessness, stealing water, stealing other resources, electricity. How did the situation come to be? Give a little history of the Bedouin here in Israel.
So the Bedouins, they were nomadic tribes, originally from Saudi Arabia area, the east side of the Mediterranean. And as the families grew, as the clans grew, they needed more land for grazing. And they started spreading out towards the west, towards what was then Palestine. We're talking about 250 years ago when the Ottoman Empire was the ruler here in this area of what's today the state of Israel. And that's very important to remember because they cannot be indigenous to an area if there were other people here before them. And there's no question about whether or not there were people here beforehand. The Jews lived here. When the Bedouins arrived in this area, the Jews already lived here. Obviously the Ottoman Empire was the ruler here. So there's no question in terms of international law whether or not they're indigenous or not. They are not indigenous. It is true that the Indigenous Committee of the UN has recognized the Bedouin as indigenous to the Negev. So, by the way, surprisingly so, they were not considered indigenous not to Egypt or Jordan. The Bedouins are not considered indigenous to Jordan or Egypt or to Iraq, or even in Judea and Samaria. They're not considered indigenous. The only place where they are considered indigenous is in the Negev, surprisingly so. But that's a decision that was made by the UN. As we know, the UN makes decisions not only by the international law, but by the vote of hands. So that's a very big misconception of considering the Negev as indigenous to the Negev.
Well, the UN doesn't even recognize, Israel's right to Jerusalem, our historical ties. So that's not surprising. So the Bedouin arrive here from the different countries, from Saudi Arabia, and then comes the establishment of the State of Israel. What happens next to that community?
Well, before we move on to the State of Israel, it's very important to understand that when the Bedouins arrived in the Negev, the Ottoman Empire tried to have some kind of enforcement of law over the Bedouins. And this is in the books, in the writings, that the Ottoman Empire tried to do what we call in Hebrew siddur, to organize the situation of the Negev, because these nomadic tribes that were wandering around kept on getting into fights with each other. And not only that, they refused to pay taxes and refused to register any kind of land during the Ottoman Empire, which is one of the reasons why today the Bedouins do not have private land, because they never know, during the Ottoman Empire or the British mandate, did the government, the government, they never recognized their rights over any kind of land. And the Bedouins never wanted to be on the grid. They never wanted to pay tax. And that's why today, when you're asking about the State of Israel, we can't ignore the history of the relationship between the Bedouins and the ruler. Anywhere they were throughout the Middle East, they never got along with the administration, with the ruler in the different times. So it's really important to understand that when we talk about the Bedouins today in Israel.
So jumping ahead, so there you have the Bedouins are now here. They are given citizenship. And for almost 60 years, the government basically ignores the reality. Again, they started off as nomads, but now you have a new generation where Bedouins have set up shops, set up encampments throughout the Negev. They're no longer, for the most part, roaming the Negev desert with their flocks. They still have animals. They still have flocks. But it's not a situation that you envision the typical Bedouin. They're in one place, in other words. That's really what it comes down to. But you have a situation where there's lawlessness, there's no order. You have about 220,000 Bedouin residents. 50,000 are living in these small, approximately in these small or vast encampments, rather, meaning they're spread about. You have 18 recognized either cities or local councils where the Bedouins are living legally. And then you have an entire group of people, 50,000 plus, who are living off the grid. What is Regavim's proposal? What is the current proposal in terms of bringing those off the grid back into society, back into Israeli society? They are residents. They are citizens.
Right. So when the State of Israel was established, the first 19 years between 48 and 1948 and 1966, the state of Israel did not know how to treat the Bedouins in the Negev, the same way the state of Israel didn't know how to treat the other Arab communities living in Israel, because for the fact that we were in at war with each other, the Arabs and the Jews living here in this area, before 1948. And then after the war, suddenly the day after the war, we're living together in the same state, the Arabs and the Jews. And for the first 19 years of the state of Israel, Israel did not know how to treat the Arab population. Because there was a question, what's going to be the future with this Arab population? 1966, Israel decides that the Bedouins and the Arabs, all the Arabs living in Israel, are equal citizens like any other citizens in the state of Israel. However, with the Bedouins in the Negev, the state said something very simple. A modern state can't have a phenomena of nomadic people wandering around the state of Israel. A modern state has to have, the citizens have to have a permanent address in order for them to have the infrastructure that each citizen should have in a modern country. That means electricity, water, pavements, health services, and education services. And so the state could collect taxes. And by the way, Israel is not the only state in the world that is facing this problem of nomadicy, which is also, as we know, many states in Europe, Australia, many countries around the world have the same problem of tribes that were nomadic, and a modern country can't have that kind of way of life. And the state of Israel established originally 7 towns that are meant only for these Bedouin clans. And when I say only for the Bedouin clans, that means you, Josh, cannot live in those towns because you're a Jew. And Jews are not allowed to live in that town. And by the way, this went through a Supreme Court of Israel decision called Begatz Avitan. A person, his name was Avitan. He heard that the government of Israel is giving land for free to the Bedouins in the Negev, and he went to one of these towns and he wanted to get a plot to build his own house. And the state of Israel said, no, you can't, because you are a Jew and these towns are only for Arabs. Now, that would not work the opposite way. That means if an Arab wants to build a house in Be'er Sheva or in Merad or in Jerusalem or in Tel Aviv, no way will he be denied. That would be a apartheid state. And Israel, as known, Israel is not an apartheid state. So the Arabs could live anywhere they want in the state of Israel, but Jews are not allowed to live anywhere they want because the Supreme Court said these towns are for Bedouin only because they are a minority. And the state of Israel has an obligation to look out for this minority and give them the option of living in towns, saving or protecting their culture and their special way of life.
See, that's something a lot of people don't even realize, and it's something I just learned recently, the fact that you have Bedouin-only towns. I mean, there. If you have a yeshuv or a community in Judea and Samaria, you have people screaming apartheid and whatnot, but here you actually have Bedouins who are living in towns which Jews can't live in, but you do have, nevertheless, even though Regavim is trying to come up with a solution to regulate the housing in the Negev and to put these Bedouin on the grid and encourage them to move into these cities, you still have two elements in the south. You have, number one, you have extremist organizations who are encouraging the Bedouin not to work with the state of Israel, to stay out in the desert, not to take any compensation deals, not to do anything. You have them. And then you have a second phenomenon, a radical Islamic phenomenon, the northern branch of the Islamic movement, which is basically the Muslim Brotherhood living here in Israel, who are also not only encouraging the Bedouin not to work or deal with the state of Israel, but they are having such a big influence on the daily life down in the Negev. For years, we heard about the Bedouin serving in the army. That number is down tremendously. And one of the results is because you have the northern branch who is discouraging army services or army service. They are coming in, building mosques down in the south, financing mosques, getting involved in the educational system, and really having a negative influence on the Bedouin down in the south. So I want you to address these two phenomena. Number one, these NGOs, so-called human rights NGOs, who are actually not working to benefit the Bedouin down there, harming them. And number two, the Islamic branch of the Northern Movement, which has flexed its muscles in the south, so to speak, and are having a negative influence. Address these two groups, please.
So So Josh, let me take it on a different angle. 70 years ago in the Negev, the Bedouins were pretty much pro-Israel. They had nothing against the state of Israel. They did their own thing, but they had nothing against the state of Israel. And there were many Bedouins that actually served in Tzahal and the IDF. And what happened today, when we look today, it's less than 1% of the Bedouins that serve in the army. And then the question is, what happened? What happened that, you know, they used to be pro-Israel and today they're more anti-Israel than pro-Israel? And I have three answers for that. One is the feeling that they are being discriminated. I could show you numbers and figures and show you that the state of Israel is putting more budgets, more money into the Bedouin towns than into any other towns in the state of Israel. We could see that per city, we can see that per capita, but the child that grows up in these illegal towns, he doesn't know all that number. He doesn't see all those numbers. He doesn't feel it. What he sees is he lives in a house and he doesn't have electricity or water, and he sees his Jewish neighbor in Be'er Sheva that has electricity and water. So he feels discriminated. So he grows up with a anti-Israel feeling already. Number two is, as you said, these extreme Muslim movements that are more and more active in the Negev. And that's not to blame the Bedouins. I blame the state of Israel for that situation, because the state of Israel didn't have the sense to put the right infrastructure in terms of education and informal education, afternoon activities for these kids. And so there was some kind of a vacuum, and who the people that moved into this vacuum were the extreme Islamic movements. And we need to remember, the Bedouins, because they were nomadic, they used to be what we call secular. They were Muslim, but they didn't have the access to the religion religious services. They didn't have mosques because they were nomadic. They didn't have imamim. They didn't go on Fridays to prayer. But now that they are permanent in these places, the Muslim movement has, as you said, built huge mosques, and the people that talk in those mosques are anti-Israel, very extreme. The third reason for this anti-Israel movement within the Bedouins is the polygamy. And I think this is the main issue, and that is the problem that many of the Bedouin men have multiple wives. And where are these wives coming from? Because the Bedouin are like any other population in the world. It's more or less 50% men and 50% women. So where are all these women coming from? So they used to come from the Gaza Strip, but now there's a very big fence. They're not coming in from the Gaza Strip anymore, but many of them are coming in from Egypt and from Hebron, and from Jordan. And these women coming in, they are not pro-Israel. They grew up in a very anti-Israel environment. Not only that, when you just think about it, one of the leaders of Hamas in the Gaza Strip, Hania, his two sisters live in Israel in Tel Sheva. They're married to Bedouins. And obviously, they are not teaching their children to be pro-Israel. They are not teaching their children to go and serve in the army and fight against the uncle that lives in the Gaza Strip. So this is a huge, huge issue that, I'm sorry to say, but the state of Israel has really did a very... Mechdal. This is a huge screw-up on behalf of the state of Israel that has not stopped this from happening. And not only that, just think about in terms of economy, all these, because polygamy is illegal in the state of Israel, so what's happening is they go to the Beit Din HaShari, the Shari courts.
The Sharia courts, believe it or not, we do have those here in Israel, people don't realize.
They are considered illegal courts, like the rabbinical courts in Israel, and they are... Then they do what we call a small divorcement, which means it's considered a divorcement by the state of Israel, but it's not considered by the Sharia. So they continued living together, but they are considered as a divorced couple. So they get now the woman that was so-called divorced, now she also gets a benefit of a single mom. And some families have three, four, five mothers, and they are considered single moms with all the benefits of Social Security and all that. And this is a huge deal. And again, this is a huge screw up on behalf of the state of Israel. We really hope that the state of Israel is going to face this problem.
You're listening to Israel Uncensored, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. My name is Josh Hasen. I'm here with Meir Deutsch, Director of Policy and Knesset Relations here with the Regavim organization. Of course, you know I'm affiliated with Regavim. We're going to take a short break and come right back.
Martyrdom does not end something, said Indira Gandhi. It is only a beginning. And for me, each episode is a new beginning. Because I'm telling a story of the past set to build a present identity that's motivated to make the future of which we dream. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Listen to The Jewish Story with Rav Mike Foyer on thelandofisrael.com.
And we are back. Josh Hasten here, Israel Uncensored, Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Hope you're enjoying the show. Get in touch with me during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com. I appreciate each and every one of your emails. And with your permission, I'd love to read some of your emails on the air. You can also find me on Facebook, Joshua Hasten, or on Twitter at Josh Hasten. We are here with Meir Deutsch, Regavim, the plan for regulating Bedouin settlement in the Negev. He described thoroughly the situation and the problems, what's going on down there, whether it's the illegal building, the polygamy, on and on, the fact that the government has not done enough to weed out the influence of the radical Islamists who have come down there and set up shop in the schools and the mosques in the Negev. So, Mayor, just one last question, I guess, but it's a vast question, and really in regard to the book, policy paper Regavim put out in terms of creating order down in the Negev. You started to describe the illegal housing and how people have to be put on the grid. What else is in this policy paper? What else has to happen so that there's law and order down in the Negev, which is the mandate of Regavim, whether it's in the north, south, east, west of the country? What has to happen in order for the Bedouin to be put on the grid and there be order down in the Negev for generations to come? What is it ultimately that has to happen?
Look, Josh, in the Negev, there are two main issues, the two main problems, which one is, as we talked about, is the illegal building, and the other is the ownership claims. We're not going to go into the ownership claims. Maybe you could have me again on your show. But let's talk for a moment about the illegal towns that were built. As you said, approximately 2,300 towns, illegal towns, clusters. And in the meantime, the state of Israel has built 18 legal towns, originally seven legal towns, and then 10 years ago, the seven towns were built in the 70s, and then 10 years ago, Israel built another 11 towns, legalized 11 towns for the Bedouins. And today, there are 18 legal towns only for Bedouins in the Negev. Each one of these towns is almost the size of Be'er Sheva. Now, in Be'er Sheva, there are 230,000 people living in Be'er Sheva. And the Bedouins have 18 towns almost the same size of Be'er Sheva. And what we're saying, as of today, half of the Bedouins live already in these towns. Half of the population, the Bedouin population, lives in the seven original towns. And another approximately 80,000 live in these extra 11 towns that were legalized 10 years ago. And what we're talking about is approximately 50,000 Bedouins living outside of these 18 towns. And we say the state of Israel has to move them into these 18 towns and put them on the grid. We're not against coming to some kind of a compromise with them because it's going to be very difficult for the state of Israel to move 50,000 Bedouins, as we said, not really pro-Israel. It's going to be very difficult for the state of Israel to move them. So we support some kind of a compensation towards the Bedouin, you know, paying them money to move into these towns. We're fine with that, even though, you know, it's not really just. But we understand the logic behind that. But at the end of the day, Israel will have to put down the its foot and say, you have to move into these towns. And if using force will be needed, so that's what the state of Israel has to do.
There you have it, and it's an extensive conversation. But that, I believe, is step number one. I agree with the mayor. Step number one is to get those off the grid, 50,000 plus living in 2,300 illegal clusters on the grid. And there's a lot more that we can get into. We just don't have the time for today in terms of the ownership claims, the fact that there's so many different bodies in the Israeli government involved in this whole mess and not always working together, a lot of bureaucracy involved. But we need to, once and for all, get started down the path of regulating the Bedouin settlement in the Negev. And this is not only to benefit all of the rest of us who are law-abiding citizens in the state of Israel, whether you're Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, but this is to benefit and will benefit the Bedouin themselves, who in today's day and age can, and a lot of them want to be on the grid and have the same social services and technological advancements and medical care that the rest of us in the state of Israel enjoy, and which they can have if they're willing and if they weed out those outside bad influences and don't take the advice of those NGOs who try to get them to stay where they are and encouraging them to get a better deal from the government. If they're willing to accept the Regavim plan, we believe that there's a bright future for the Bedouin here in the state of Israel. Mayor Deutsch, Regavim, Director of Policy and Knesset Relations, I want to thank you for your time, and we'll have to talk about more in the future on this issue.
Thank you, Josh, so much for having me on your show.
That's it for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. Josh Hasten here, and big shout out to Ben Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. Without him, there's no sound. And make sure you listen to all the other shows on the network. We have a whole slew of wonderful programming here, bringing you the news that you're not getting anywhere else, certainly not in the mainstream media. Again, be in touch during the week, Josh at thelandofisrael.com, on Facebook, Joshua Hasten, and on Twitter at Josh Hasten. Most importantly, between now and when we speak again next Monday, everyone out there, be safe. Shalom, shalom from the southern Binyamin region here in the land of Israel. Thanks so much.